The Protect Your Neck Podcast, UFC Fortaleza Breakdown Show. From barn burners to gunfights, Brazil has got itself a fun night.
Hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark.
Is up, you savages. This is the Protect Your Neck Podcast, and I am your host, Dan Tom, analyst and writer for flowcombat.com. And this is going to be the UFC Fortaleza, Belfort versus Gastelum, UFC Fight Night Breakdown here in the Protect Your Neck Podcast, where we break down high-level MMA. But first, just want to give a special shout again to everybody from last week. In person, or those of you tuning into my content, if you weren't sick of my voice, I sure as shit was. Last week was pretty crazy for UFC 209, as is most Vegas fight weeks. This one especially, though, just I knew I had a lot planned, so I planned really heavily to use that week before to get ahead of things. A little peek behind the curtain. I always get it started, you know, the week before when I'm doing a card, but for UFC 209, I knew it was going to be so busy that I wanted to not just get it started, but get it done the week before. And I put so much emphasis and so much stress on getting it done, plus the other stuff I had going on. And, you know, as is always the case with, I'm sure, many of y'all, something always seems to come up in certain facets of life, and this so happens to be mine. As hard as I do try to get ahead of my work. And sure enough, I must have stressed myself into, crazy enough, shingles. Yeah, I didn't think they were at first because you're not supposed to get those till you're older. But, you know, I do have, forms of stress anxiety. So I guess, you know, stressing yourself sick isn't something foreign to me. And I guess it was along those lines because my immune system's usually strong. Like I've gotten sick maybe once in the last 6 years. And, you know, I was hitting the mats more regularly, finally. And then, of course, you know, I noticed something kind of like on my back, and I'm like, what the hell? And I'm pretty hyper-vigilant about keeping my skin clean, use the defense soap, tea tree oils, all that good stuff, acidophilus, probiotics, good healthy diet, and all that good stuff. So I was able to catch it early, but even though the rash went away, and the rash wasn't bad, which is why I initially thought it wasn't shingles. I'm sorry, I'm sharing this health podcast, not the Protect Your Neck podcast. But it wasn't that bad compared to the pictures I was seeing online. But if anybody who's, you know, kind of familiar with shingles, you know, it's the after effects is the worst. So once that whole, you know, contagious period. So by the way, it wasn't contagious during fight week. So don't worry, it wasn't a sleeper cell, a ticking time bomb if you interacted with me during fight week. But unfortunately, I did have my poker face on though, because all week I was really struggling with those post symptoms. You kind of get, I think it's called PVN is the actual symptom, but essentially your nerves are kind of distressed and you're just in really bad pain, and it's almost flu-like symptoms. All the other symptoms are like concussion symptoms, which is another reason why I had trouble even deciphering. I had this at first because, again, I deal with concussion symptoms. So, you know, fatigue, fogginess, and, you know, all these things, irritability, all these things are kind of like normal concussion symptoms. So, I took care of it early, but I didn't diagnose it till late. So yeah, long story short, sorry about all that. Essentially, was dealing with a lot that week, which probably explains a lot. Nonetheless, there is no explanation or forgiveness for that drunk last episode. I apologize for that. I should have just said that right off the bat. No excuses for that one, although it was funny. You know, maybe it was the tiredness and this and that that wore down my system and made old Dan Tom get a little drunker, a little faster than he usually does. And I thought I was in a good place to start the podcast, but my co-host for that night, Brian, not to throw him under the bus, but he was a little too drunk, so he's like, I gotta get something to eat. So while he was fixing himself something to eat, I smartly did the responsible thing while my friend was sobering up. What did I do? I drank more in waiting. And actually, I ended up having like two more beers waiting for him. And even then, I still felt like okay enough to start the podcast. But man, midway through, as you hear, the emotions pick up, maybe somewhere along the Pearl Harbor talk. But oh my God, I apologize. It probably wasn't even that bad. In fact, I didn't even get like one complaint of the podcast, to be honest. I, like many things, make things much worse than they need to be. But in listening back, I was cringing over myself. Again, not just the tiredness making, you know, all of us easy to be drunk, but for me personally, my wiring, though my extensive vocabulary can be impressive and dynamic at times when I drink, as you heard, yeah, that extensive vocabulary goes quickly to F-bombs after F-bombs. I mean, there was more cursing than a Quentin Tarantino film. Yeah, a lot of expletives there, so sorry, it almost felt like, you know, that Happy Gilmore scene where I just, if I were to start editing beeps, it would have just been one giant beep. So yeah, sorry for your ears. Sorry for if I roughed up anybody's sensibilities. I was trying to phone it in to be funny. I wasn't joking about that in some parts, but listening back, I'm like, yeah, didn't mean to phone it in that hard. So apologies. Hope you enjoyed the parts that were fun and funny because there were some good times there. But yeah, lesson learned. We all have our lessons with alcohol, and I've had many in my life. That's mine for, you know, the podcasting side of it. I knew I was playing with fire, so thanks for sticking with me. Yeah, I guess all those formalities and explanations are out of the way. Again, thank you for your kind reviews, sticking with downloads, and just kind words. I got so much positive feedback last week. It was really awesome. It was really cool catching up with friends in town, like Robin Black and John Ramdean, and I say them because, you know, recently there's some kind of news that dropped, a fight that cut about 10 people from what I heard. I don't know the details. I haven't caught up with Robin, but met John for the first time. He was great. Friends for life with that dude. And Robin's been nothing but good to me. I'm not too worried about those guys because they're very talented. And I'm sure they're going to land somewhere else and bigger doors are going to open. But just wanted to give them a special shout out. I had a really fun podcast breaking down pre-UFC 209. That was a really fun drunk time as well. But yeah, shout outs to those guys. I don't want to spend any more time giving shout outs. We're already 7 minutes in. Let's get to the card and let's get this out of the way, shall we? We're going to start from the bottom. The UFC Fight Pass portion. Yes, Gareth McClellan versus what is this guy? Paulo Borrachinha. And if you look at him on Sherdog, it's another Henrique name. We'll just go with Borrachinha, even though it's hard to say. We have a lot of Brazilian Henriques. So this guy comes in as pretty big favorite for UFC debutant. I'm kind of staying away from this one because it's a debutant. I'd be lying if I didn't say I took maybe put a couple bucks on the TKO prop for plus money for old Paulo there because he's a southpaw, and you know I like me some southpaws, but he shows, even though he's still pretty green, he shows kind of the natural awareness in the pocket, shot selections, just kind of wherewithal for a guy his age in fights, kind of above average where he should be from my estimates, although it's a small sample size to pull from. Again, I suggest you stay away from it. I largely am too. A lot of hate on Gareth McClellan, but how do I be nice? I guess he's a jack of all trades, master of none, to put it nicely. I want to say he trained in North America, perhaps TriStar in Canada, his last camp or two, but this one it appears he either stayed in South Africa or New Zealand by the looks of his social media. That said, he's 35, judging by, his long line of fights there. I guess not that long, 18 in total, but I've seen enough of his sample size to be pretty confident there's going to be no major curves I see being hit. If he wins, great for him. It won't hurt me too much because, again, I'm pretty much staying away from this one. But the pick is Paulo, the Brazilian, Borrachinha. I probably mispronounced that. And speaking of Brazilians, we have Hani Jason versus Jason Kennedy for the Fight Pass headliner. The pick for this one is Kennedy, although it's kind of reluctant. I'm kind of slowing my horses on the next Canadian prospect. I think a lot of us are saying that because many of us, including myself, are just hungry for that next Canadian prospect. Man, that Canada scene was strong back in the day, but my, how the mighty have fallen. That said, I'm still always rooting for Canada, to do well, especially in mixed martial arts. But But yeah, I think Honey Jason's live here. I'm going to see where the line goes, see if it goes more for plus money. It's kind of been even, you know, teeter-tottering to even money to underdog money for Honey Jason, depending on what house you're looking at. But excuse me. But he's live in Brazil. He looks in great shape for this one. He dusted off the dust pretty well, despite losing to Dennis Bermudez. He essentially fought the fight we all thought we would, but the ring rust and time off, I don't know, was so much an issue more than it was his kind of stylistic preferences of being an opportunistic finisher, right? He's not a big amount of process to Honey Jason. You're not going to really count on him to bank rounds. Crafty, but kind of deliberate from the guard, a little too willing to play there. So it'll be interesting to see if Kennedy opts for the cage pushing he was doing against, Dan, you only just scouted for him, Alessandro Ricci. And it's late at night, in case he can't already tell. You know, or if he tries to take it to the ground standing, you know, we didn't get to see too much of it from his last fight. But if you look at his regional fights and generally talk around Kennedy, there's a lot to like. You look at his age, kind of a lot of fight-to-fight improvements there. So hard to say. I doubt he's going to do either long. I think he's going to work his renowned transition game. This is a very much of a mixed fighter, not a specialist at anything. But he will be dancing from danger zone to danger zone, which is the reason why I don't blame you for picking or playing Honey Jason here. It's on my stay away. Both these fights, by the way, are my fights to avoid. That being said, again, with the line, I may take a shot on Jason. And largely staying away from both of these as we move to FS1. To Pesheris versus Berkman, and this one's tough. I can see why the line's justified, as Pesheris is a justified favorite. But it's one of those weird fights. Berkman has all these check marks from experience to knockout power, to striking technique, to striking diversity, to, well, maybe not wrestling, but submission defense and kind of grappling awareness. But Pesheris, he knows what he's good at, even though he doesn't have, you know, reach or leg reach. He knows how to use that stout frame. He knows how to apply that kind of aggressive grappling style. And there's already kind of a built-in submission defense with those frames. But he is a talented grappler that knows how to grapple to his frame, which is important here. And it's hard for me to be unbiased here. I would want to pick Berkman solely for the reason that... biased here, that my main man Dennis Davis, head amateur coach and one of the main coaches and longest coaches of Extreme Couture, Dennis Davis, if you're not familiar, if you listen to Chael Sonnen's podcast, if you hear about the young stunner, young good-looking stud that would fight on all his local shows back in the day for Team Quest, the guy he thought, kind of was the total package. That was Dennis Davis. That's who he was talking about. We were lucky enough to have him here at Extreme Couture. He does work with our next door neighbor in Utah, though, Josh Berkman, as he is cornering him down in Brazil right now. So for that reason, I almost wanted to pick him, but I can't really justify that, nor was it on my list to explain it. So I got to stay true. As much as I want to do the homer pick, I will be playing the over, as I suggest that for parlay fodder, as it's recommended for my pieces for your parlay, because even though Berkman can sometimes, you know, he's so close to winning these fights, there's so many fights that it was winnable, it was just these questionable decisions that Berkman tends to make, like the talent, the toughness, the athleticism, the experience, you name it, he's got it. It's just he has to make these right decisions and adjustments. I like that Dennis Davis is in his corner. Dennis will probably give him good adjustments in between rounds, but this thing is going to go rounds because both guys are tough, both guys are durable, both guys have good submission defense. So I think the over, even at minus 230, might be pricey to play straight up, but I think makes good parlay fodder. So I'm just going to leave it at that. We're going to move on to Hani Yahya versus Joe Soto. This one I was a bit tight on. I came in initially leaning Soto. I fought back and forth, but I stuck with Joe Soto. He's paid off, I believe, last two times as the underdog. His chin held up under tough shots, but those tough shots won't be coming against Hani Yahya. Hani Yahya is very much of a evolved Hoist Gracie, a Damian Maia, if you will. Underrated, he's been around, been very consistent despite maybe, you know, breaks here and there and not the biggest fights or a lot of fights falling out and you get replacements and to no fault of his own has kind of remained under the radar. That said, I think Joe Soto is very underrated. You know, he's got a wrestling background, but it's deceiving because you see him get taken down. I think a lot of more opportunistic takedowns off of kicks against Tanaka, who's underrated, who's a very different style takedown artist than Hanayaya is, who's more traditional cage pressure, looking to get in on hips, chain off from single legs, dive, half guard, and work off of limbs from there. Soto, again, I think he's one of those guys that can turn the takedown defense on when he can, but it's very deceiving because he's such a talented grappler at the high level, you know, grappling in high-level shows and no-gi, EBI, etc. It can be deceiving, you know, kind of like the presenting thing I said with Tony Ferguson. He, you know, Soto will do the same thing, you know. He'll work for a single leg, but then kind of a dive for a leg lock when the guy puts his leg in between all of his last fight, you know, kind of similar, harken back to what we were just going over in UFC 209 with Yuri Alcantara. Soto did the same thing in his last fight, but he did it off of a single leg setup, you know. He'll do these things, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him not only upset as he's my pick, but even upset with a submission. You know, although the aforementioned Alcantara proved me wrong, that, you know, not that I was saying this was a hard and fast rule, and I even admitted it was an unfair generalization, but I often point to, you know, leg locks being those quiet factor against traditional gi guys, and even though Alcantara showed it, and Yaya is not no dummy when it comes to leg locks either. You know, I believe Matthew Lopez may have gone for some in amongst his many scrambles, but Yaya's no joke, and yeah, like I was saying, sorry. Soto can put him in precarious positions that he's not used to. It's a complete different grappling style is what I'm trying to say. And you have to almost adhere to a complete different grappling style if you're a wrestling-based guy like Soto, who is very competent in leg locks. I mean, that's a big gap to jump. There's a lot of learning. There's a lot of open-mindedness. Says a lot to Soto as a technician. And obviously, he's going to have the stand-up advantage. I see him having more ways to win this fight, more ways of putting, you know, him in precarious situations. You know, yeah, Lopez was a wrestler too, but as we saw, Lopez makes kind of, you know, poor decisions and paid for it against Yaya. I don't know if Soto's going to do the same. I think Soto's going to have more of a well-thought plan to his actions. And, yeah, I got Soto here. I played him small. He's not on the fights to avoid, because I'm sticking by my underdog pick here. Next is, though, on the fights to avoid is Sergio Moraes versus Ramos. I'll be honest, I had Ramos to the 11th hour here. Moraes is the deserved favorite, but I picked Chagas against him, even though Chagas, like Ramos, is also a UFC debutant. Once again, breaking the rule that I tell you. Once again, breaking the rule that I always tell you. Not to do, as in betting the UFC debutantes. But Ramos has those intangibles. He goes for broke, although he kind of faded going for broke in Bellator against David Rickles. You know, that was 2 years ago. As he has improved to how much, that all is not certain when, you know, the sample size is ridiculously low, being two fights since then. And yeah, wasn't exactly the most highest level competition now, was it? But he's very athletic, fast, decent striking technique, and much more confident than what his striking technique is, which can be bad. In this case, I think it is good, especially with the potential that Ramos has to improve. You know, as a 5'8 stout frame, he grapples like you think he would, except he's got really good wrestling, which makes his frame even more effective. As we previously mentioned, the more stout, that aggressive wrestling, kind of, you know, a scrambly style can pay off. And if you watch Ramos's gi to no gi footage, you'll see that he has a lot of that. And, you know, not just crazy, you know, arm bars and stuff like that. But, I could very well see Ramos pulling something out here. And the submission props, again, are pretty high there for another guy that submissions are a specialty. He could even, you know, possibly outwork Moraes if the bottom, you know, does finally seem to drop out on this fight for Sergio Moraes. But I couldn't pick against the Panther Man. The guy comes to compete. He has that intangible. This is a short notice for Ramos. I was not aware, well, at least it was not listed on Tapology or elsewhere, that Ramos was getting ready for anything else. His last fight was in December, not too long ago, but still short notice. yeah, I got to side with Mirai's, but for both those reasons, both those arguments on both sides, this is definitely on the avoid list. It's deserved to be number one on the avoid list. All right, last fight on the FS1 prelims, Francisco Massaranduba-Trinaldo versus Kevin Lee. This is a fight where I probably would play Trinaldo as the dog, and I don't blame you for doing so. I had Trinaldo against Pearson and against other people as well. Can't think of it off the top of my head. But he's also burned me as well. He's just that guy that comes through. He burns everybody, right? And he could burn me here, but it doesn't matter because this one's going to be the stated bias pick. I got Kevin Lee here, Extreme Couture, stated bias. That said, I do think he is a deserved slight favorite. I think wrestling is going to be a key difference and submission specialty, you know, or submission defense. Although Trinaldo, despite getting older, has seemed to improve his gas tank. If the wrestling and the pressure of Kevin Lee, you know, and Trinaldo, you know, failing to find a finish, of course, causes him to fade, then I could see a third round finish. This is the one where I might play a third round flyer, if anywhere, for Kevin Lee. But make no mistake about it, Massaranduba is going to be alive. We saw Leonardo Santos tax Kevin Lee on the feet. And Trinaldo, without saying too much, will be able to do the same. Or at least he'll have the opportunities to do so. But, you know, that said, Kevin Lee's made a lot of improvements. You know, can't say who, but knocking out high level guys behind the scenes. Working Mayweather, is working at Extreme Couture, Drysdale Jiu-Jitsu, all around town. Can't say much more than that, but the pick here is Kevin Lee. So that ends the prelims, as we will be right back for a six-fight main card for UFC Fight Night 106, Belfort versus Gastelum, right here on the Protect Your Neck podcast.
Cucarachas enojadas.
And we're back right here in the Protect Your Neck podcast for UFC Fight Night 106, Belfort versus Gastelum, and kicking off the main card is the rematch of the UFC 207 fight. Yes, Tim Means versus Alex Cowboy Oliveira. The first fight I had Tim Means ultimately because I thought he was the more technical fighter all around. And his specialty is not only the same specialty as Cowboy's inside the clinch, but is better. I think that even though the sample size, though you cannot condemn either man, I believe that essentially, you know, Tim Means was winning all facets and phases of the fight as it was playing out before the illegal knees took place. And going into this fight, I essentially feel the same. And real quick, Tim Means, man, this dude is like to say he's, you know, I kind of brushed over it saying he's super technical in all facets. I mean, he is. You want to talk like, especially, you know, guys who appreciate, you know, switch stance or southpaw fighters who are just very technical, appreciate elbows and little, you know, taking advantage of the small spaces, I should say. I mean, Tim Means is like a wizard of a tactician combined with the heart of a crackhead. He is like Skinny Pete from Breaking Bad if you put him in the chair of the Matrix that fuels you with all the martial arts technique. That's essentially who Tim Means is. And I'm a big fan of Cowboy Oliveira. I mean, you know, impregnating three women who live on the same street is nothing to scoff at. But this is the mixed martial arts cage. And as much as we like Cowboy's infight, I don't want to say his in-fight stuff because it was really despicable. By the way, I have to apologize. I was kind of defending it at first because I didn't see everything, and I kind of live-tweeted, and I did correct myself the night of because it was wrong, but it's even more wrong looking back at that Will Brooks and Cowboy Oliveira fight. And I'm a Cowboy Oliveira fan. That was a bummer. Nonetheless, as good as his clinch looked there, I don't think it's going to look as good here, even though he has that good Randy Couture-like head pressure with his strong underhooks. Tim Means isn't just underrated wrestling, and I'm not saying that because he threatened the media in his last post-fight speech. I'm one of the people waving the Tim Means flag, in particular to his underrated grappling, for quite some time. Because even though, you know, wrestling to many tall strikers was a susceptibility to him, as, you know, he would struggle from his back, you could maybe argue that early in his career, he's made vast improvements to his get-up abilities, and even just kind of counter-wrestling, defending in the clinch, as we saw him reverse Cowboy Oliveira from being deep on his hips last time. And that was because tall, framey guys who understand hips and lever awareness do really well, and he understands that lever awareness. I mean, you can look at it back in the George Sullivan fight, how he would kind of reverse him to the ground in the clinch and end up finishing Sullivan. And he's only developed it since then to the aforementioned, you know, last fight with Cowboy Oliveira. Means is not to be trifled there. On top, he's got elbows. You know, and again, on bottom, we saw, even when, you know, Cowboy Oliveira was able to muscle him down, we saw him, you know, use the turtle smartly, where he had his elbows tucked in to protect any leg hooks from going in, and then he immediately swift and swiveled and switched his hips over to suck to one side of the cage to protect his back from being taken even further, as he would stand back up. You know, when he would turtle and tripod up, he would fight hands smartly. You know, yeah, I mean, if Cowboy was going to take his back opportunistically like he did to Nunes or Joe Merritt, he had his opportunities in that fight, and Means did everything right to stifle him. I don't see that changing unless Cowboy Oliveira has another means, pardon the pun, to stifle Means. Then I see this being the New Mexican Natives fight to lose. I played Means inside the distance -108 as a recommended prop. That's in a couple parlays, because even though I used Tim Means, he is our official recommended parlay piece, is -230 right now at 5 dimes. I got greedy because I see this being a gunfight either way. I just seeing it being a gunfight where the Cowboy, ironically, is the one being outgunned. Means going to take advantage of that those short elbows and small spaces here. Dice him up, find a finish, whether it is by submission or TKO, in my opinion, to Means, inside the distance. All right, next fight is in the female women's division, 135, Marion Renault versus Besh Cohea. This is one where I actually initially came in leaning toward Besh, but I am going with Renault. Even though Besh did show, you know, we like to kind of, you know, make fun of her for her dancing and weird ways, but you know, she did show improvements to her jab, and she always kind of had her nice, her cross was off, obviously her best punch, but, you know, her footwork in and out with the jab, setting up the cross, kind of was putting everything together more for her. With the Jessica Eye fight, which she was caught in the eye, caught with some punches, as you could see by her face, but she wasn't discouraged, you know. That is the one thing about Cohea, she is game. That said, the same thing can be said about Marion Renault. Who we saw, you know, she's been kind of, you know, it's hard to say inconsistent, because the sample sizes for most of the females are pretty inconsistent, right? It's still developing division, small records to pull from, so on and so forth. And Marion Renault is so different. It was no different, I should say, and I'm high on her as well. But in looking back, I really like the improvements. You could see, you know, trading with Gabby Garcia and Chris Cyborg paid off. She always stays in good shape, and it's never an issue despite her age, which I hate to bring up because she's a lady, and she's just so damn talented. So I see her in and out movement being superior, and she has one of the hardest jab crosses in the division. It's only seemed to have gotten better. Her flows have gotten better in transition. They seem explosive enough despite Cohea's stout and muscly base, which she looks muscly going into this fight. But I have Renault, and speaking of muscly going into the fight, Cohea is already like in sauna suits and looking like cutting a lot of weight, you know, over 24 hours out on these posts from weigh-ins. So this is recorded at night, so something to watch for tomorrow morning, how she looks in the scales. But I don't look the signs already, because she looks bigger than ever, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but just kind of noticeably bulky. Yeah, let's see if that is just an illusion of the eye, or what is going on, anomaly, whatever. But I got Renault here, and I did put a small play on her. So not only did my opinion change, but it changed a bit. And the next one, my opinion hasn't changed, but the line looks to be changing. Alert, alert. Juicy Formiga versus Ray Borg. Essentially, I have Formiga here. Formiga, very underrated, you know, long time, was number one, you know, although he's older, and that was some time ago. And Ray Borg, like me, was, like people like myself, were very high on him. And he's still young and still has a bright future, even though he's had some letdowns. He's got a road game ahead of him, you know. First of all, he has to make weight, which, according to his social media post, Ray Borg looks great. Looks like he's been having a great camp at Jackson's, which we'll touch more on in a second. But diet looks pretty in order. It looks like he's in shape. Reportedly, the weight is good. But, yeah, always tougher. You always hold weight when traveling. Nutrition is a bit different. And he will be fighting at home, or in Formiga's home in Brazil, and it's a flyweight fight. So when these fights, you know, have a low percentage of finishing, when they're very technical and the judges don't know what they're looking at, the crowd certainly has an influence. So the way I see it, unless Borg does some damage on the feet to win over scorecards or compromise Formiga enough to find a submission, I don't see Borg finding the finish or getting the win unless he essentially, you know, can spark something off on the feet. And although he's shown minor improvements, they've been kind of underwhelming. But he has been working with Brandon Gibson. And not that that is an end-all be-all, as, you know, even bright prospects like Venata showed us, hey, it doesn't matter who you're working with. At the end of the day, it's down to the fighter and what we've seen and their sensibilities, right? That being said, you could not to make excuses, but you could look at it as was Borg, you know, was it the fit NHB transition? Was that, you know, a lot often fighters, especially young, they go through transitionary phases whether they change camps or not. That could have been what it is for Borg. Maybe he comes out and blows the doors off, and this is where, you know, maybe not the bottom drops out. I don't think Formiga is nearly to that phase, but this is where we kind of start to see a downtrend from Formiga. That could very well happen. And judging by the betting lines, Formiga opened as a favorite, and the nines have been pretty competitive, I believe, all week. It looks like Formiga is moving to dog territory, which I'm going to double dip and play him harder if he does, because I like Formiga here. He just barely doesn't make, place in my parlay piece, but he is in some parlays, I assure you that. I did play him straight up. He's one of the best back takers. I mean, he can take a back off like a slipped punch. He can slip a punch and take a back. It's insane. So not only can he keep up with the scrambles with Borg, who arguably that's where a lot of his strength comes from on the top or bottom. It's what saves him, is scrambling and relentlessness. He is going to have a guy in Formiga who can not only hang with him every step of the way, but can catch Borg if he's not careful. Again, Borg could be the spoiler, although the odds aren't indicating much of a spoiler it would be. But I like Formiga in this spot. Moving on to Barbosa versus Dariush. Ooh, I like this one. Edson Barbosa, who is 1-1 against southpaws, will be put to the test as, again, the common kryptonite. As much as Barbosa, we love to hail his striking and leg kicks, it is pressure that has been his common culprit. And although I initially came into this fight leaning with my man, Beneil Dariush, as I really like the guy and I'll be rooting for him here, I had to pick Barbosa because I don't see Dariush recreating the same environment or painting the same picture Michael Johnson did. Who, I did pick Johnson at the time, and cash is a +350 dog. I just couldn't do it, though the odds makers feel Dariush is more of a chance than Johnson did. I feel there's just an inherent speed and explosion and athletic difference. I don't want to say disadvantage, but just difference here. I think that's what it's going to come down to. Even if Dariush is able to close the distance and make it into the clinch space, I believe he's still going to need those explosive edges to kind of get Barbosa down, who is deceptively good takedown defense, not just from the clinch, but just from his shot denial of footwork in general. I mean, the guy moves around and just does very well in that regard, and when you do get him down, he's always had a good butterfly guard to get up back to his feet. I imagine he's improving both his jiu-jitsu, wrestling, scrambles for MMA since working with Ricardo Almeida, Frankie Edgar, and company in New Jersey, because he moved down there full time, as far as I know. Though following the social media was a bit shaky on this fight, to be honest. Anyways, pressure also, I don't believe, is gonna hurt Barbosa as much as he's also had a nice counter right hand, which would have been enough to take care of anybody if it wasn't Tony Ferguson as that barb burner of a fight, which I did pick for Ferguson. But he's also developed a nice check left hook, which he'll use to kind of catch opponents on their way in or punch his way out of exchanges and or counter rebalance himself. And I see that being useful against an oncoming Beneil Dariush, because I believe Beneil Dariush is going to be smart about it. I believe, you know, Beneil Dariush, first of all, is great. You know, I think he's going to be prepared in the sense that he's got really good in-fight IQ. He's good coaches like Cordero. I'm not sure who he's training with, but I have to imagine he's training with or bringing in the right guys and under the right supervision. You know, that being said, that speed and athletic advantage, I see Barbosa getting his beats, but if Beneil can feint him heavily and come over the top, like he did with you know, James Vick in a fight, where what was really underrated about that fight is how little exchanges that Beneil Dariush wasted to counter, because against a taller guy that was going to move a lot like Vick, Beneil had to make every chance he could counter count, and he did on multiple occasions. He's going to have to do the same thing with Barbosa, who has that speed and athletic advantage that I keep harping on. But again, if you can get him to bite hard on the feints, we've seen Barbosa, even this improved iteration of Barbosa, he can still kind of bite hard on the feints like he did with Gilbert Melendez, where he bit hard, check hooked, and we saw Gilbert Melendez come hard over the top with a right hand and clock him and drop him or stun him. I don't know if he officially got the drop. I should know that offhand, but he did stun him, right? So I see it being another kind of close fight like that. You know, maybe a scorecard goes to Dariush. If Dariush gets the upset, I'll be very happy here. He'll definitely have a advantage if it goes to the ground. I just don't see it getting there, and I just don't see it staying there for long if it does, you know? With the durability and craft and intelligence of each guy, I see this going to decision, you know? If you want to play an over, a fight goes to a decision, I don't blame you there, but... Pardon me. Burps all day today, and there's no beer drinking. This is just coffees and water and juice, vegetable juice. So I don't know what to tell you. I've just got the hiccups. I know what I'm telling you. I'm pulling up wagers because I think I did play Barbosa by decision for fun. Nothing big. And I suggest you not do the same. Yeah, +141 you can get on that. And just gonna go real quick to see what the fight is. Odds are currently at 5 times for. Fight goes to decision, goes the distance -180, and the over currently sitting at -195 if you like any of those. Next up, co-main event, Gian Viante versus Mauricio Shogun Hua, -140 for Hua. Gian Viante is +120 dog. I came into this fight initially leaning toward Viante, especially when you consider, you know, that Shogun's been dropped or stopped in 6 of his last 9 fights, so... You know, makes it hard to side with him there. That being said, I ended up siding with Shogun in this fight. You know, I'm looking back at footage, even though you could test the decisions were really close in his last couple fights, he's not as shot as, you know, one might think if you look on paper or go by the general narrative. In fact, he's really adjusted his style, even though I often point to that first Shogun-Henderson fight where he starts to decline. It's also kind of where he adjusts his style, and I've kind of overlooked that in the past, where he looks to kind of time guys coming in and using that craft. And I like to credit that to maybe him working back with Cordero on and off in this past couple years. But he essentially, you know, waits for guys to come in and will time that right-hand left hook like we saw with Tohuna. And that's been Viante's, you know, thing, is particularly right hands, Shogun's best hand. You know, we saw that against, speaking of Tohuna Shogun, we saw a similar sense, even though it was different stances, from Tom Lawler catching Gian Viante. You know, Viante, I love his volume for a guy his size. He's so athletic. He variates his shots well, but he can be predictable, you know, from his in and out, his patterns in and out and his timing. You know, his patterns to his timing, I should say, can be predictable. And we see guys catch him because he keeps a low lead hand and retracts it a bit low. His aggressiveness, predictability, you know, even in fights he's winning, he's always getting hit. He's almost giving them away. And against Shogun, you know, the one thing that hasn't left Shogun, well, one thing that doesn't leave an aging fighter is power, which applies to Shogun. But the one thing that particularly hasn't left Shogun is the dog in him, man. He is still a dog in there. And unless we see, you know, one of those freak knockouts like OSP Shogun, which can very well happen. Again, 6 out of 9 is no coincidence, right? Dropped or stopped there for Shogun Hua. But unless that happens, this, even like a 60%, I even hate using this because I feel like it's disrespecting Vellante, who I like, respect. I think he's a funny guy. Don't blame me for playing here. Came in initially leaning toward him, but this match is tailor-made for Shogun Hua here. And not a Shogun of old, even, you know, Shogun, advanced Shogun Hua. Shogun should be able to catch him. That's why I played inside the distance. I could see him, you know, winning a decision, although Vellante has underrated takedown defense, so I see the wrestling Shogun that wants to bank rounds having difficulty. But, yeah, although Vellante looks to be in good shape coming into this one, good training partners between Stipe and Weidman. That Brazil trip, that Brazil travel, and Shogun Hua taking the time between fights, and it's been making him more durable. That seems to be one correlation you can say about these time between fights helping him. So, the only thing I played here small, this is one I suggest to avoid, even though it's not on my official avoid. I listed on my summary. But I played Hua inside the distance plus 160 because he always could, you know, jump on for a rear naked choke if he rocks Vellante and Vellante turtles up like wrestlers tend to do, right? So who knows? Anyways, just stand back and watch it burn in all its glory. Next fight, we have Kelvin Gastelum coming in as a minus 425 favorite for the main event against Vitor Belfort as a plus 340 dog. What do you say about this one, really? Except for, wow, initially came in at Gastelum and leaving with Gastelum almost just as fast. You know, this is a southpaw versus southpaw matchup. But the versatility and craft, even at Vitor's advanced age, I don't think the southpaw versus southpaw intricacies that I often harp on are going to play too much of a factor. As the record would suggest, Vitor Belfort is 2-1 against UFC southpaws. And that's going deep into his UFC career and iterations of it, mind you. And Kelvin Gastelum is 2-0 against UFC southpaws. So I don't think it's going to affect him too much here, but I do see Kelvin's right hook being the strike to look out for. Vitor tends to always load to his left. He's so good at slipping on the outside of right hands. Those are usually coming in the form of crosses against orthodox fighters, though, against southpaw fighter whose leaping right hook is amongst his best shot and sets up the rest of the barrage that is to come. I don't like Vitor's chances. Vitor is not completely shot, again, like the narrative may tend to suggest. He's had his moments in his last fight, so they all kind of played out the same. Vitor getting pounded out for mount, you know, at least 3 out of the last 4 fights, aside from that Henderson fight, that one outlier. So he is live there, and Kelvin, you know, if he hangs out long enough, he could be hit by one of Vitor's crafty check right hook uppercut continuums that he likes to throw. It's definitely live here, but Kelvin has a chin. He has good awareness for that. He's shown even a good awareness for spin kicks, though Vitor, I don't think, is as apt or apt to throw those at this stage of his career. But still yet, I do believe that if Belfort does hit him with these flurries that I'm saying that are underrated, I think that unless he something miracle happens and he stops Gastelum with them, with that one flurry that he seems to be, that he just about seems to be good for these days, I actually see it bringing about the finish even faster and just kind of pissing Gastelum off and making him fight even harder and more frantic to fight to get the finish. As that is the other official prop, which I usually don't do the round ones, but I feel confident in this one being the trend. I played Gastelum round one for plus 170, half a unit. I know I bet like a 8-year-old with an allowance, forgive me. But I like Gastelum here. I play him inside the distance because you never know, he could always get the rear naked choke. Ooh, can you tell that I'm tired? He might get the rear naked choke or, you know, or so forth. But yeah, I like Gastelum. Those are the plays. Tried to stick to betting. Tried to keep it kind of tight. We ran kind of late with the last episodes, them being special and very alcohol-induced. Again, I apologize for the last one. Thank you for not condemning me and sticking with me, although I don't know why I'm acting like it was such a bad episode. I didn't even get one complaint about it. I'm just being the way that I am. Relax, Dan. Thank you. If I saw you last week, and I'm all better from... the shingles outbreak. I hopefully will catch up on everything and be back to normal with many things with the format at Flow included. Hopefully that all gets online and I have more news to come soon with as far as betting and DraftKings and the future of those. I am shopping for a home for those as we speak, as I'm reformatting that. So anybody out there, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, your man is shopping those particulars. Anyways, enough said on that. Shout outs to everyone. How about that? Shout outs to everyone. I give too many goddamn shout outs. How about shout out to my lovely girlfriend? How about that? There we go. Get some points. Relax, relax. She puts up with a lot, and as much as I ran my body down, I would have run myself probably completely to the floor if she wasn't there to pick me up and help me out with a bunch. So thank you. All right. And with that, probably see you for an after party edition. I'll do one after UFC Fortaleza. Use hashtag ProtectYourNeckPodcast for submissions and transitions, which I'll be skipping tonight because we really didn't have any. Again, sorry for the last minute. I didn't say this in the beginning, but I was actually, the reason why it's last minute, I was going to skip this. Yeah, I was actually going to take my first break in the 2 years I've been doing this, people. But I decided, no, I could not. There was too much requests. Last week was too good. No, I could not. That's why you're not getting it something until tomorrow, which should be Friday when you're hearing this. So until Saturday, good luck on your bets. Don't put ice in your whiskey. And protect your neck and all that good stuff. I'll see you guys on Saturday.